And good morning. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning. Another day of legal abuse, even though Monday through Friday, I try to be as curmudgeon-y as I can. I go out of my mind on Saturday. Yeah, there's nothing like it. You know, I've been doing Handle on the Law now for, I don't even want to talk about how many years. Let me put it this way. It was before air conditioning was in cars, long time ago. And, it has been a long time. 27 years in the morning. Wow. And on Saturdays, 30-something years now? Yeah. So anyway, Saturdays is my favorite day of the week, and many others. My best friend says that's the Saturday many of my friends actually were introduced to me via the radio and couldn't believe what a wonderful, gracious human being I am in non-radio life. Well, okay, maybe not. Phone numbers. 1-800-520-1534, 1-800-520-1534. That is the number to call. Top of the hour, always the best time to call. Throughout the show, there'll be times when you try to call in and you really have an important question and you can't get through. And there are some times when we have an hour and a half, 2 hours, where the lines are jam-packed, and then you bitch and moan and you email me. Hey, come in at the top of the hour. Virtually every single time the lines are open. 800-520-1534. And then occasionally we have people not calling in. And here's the problem with a call-in show, caller-driven shows. You need calls. It's really difficult to do a show where we don't have calls. There's a friend of mine, and just as a quick aside, famous talk show host, a guy by the name of Phil Hendry, who had been fired from KFI, and he ended up moving to Ventura. And it was midnight to 6 a.m. overnight call-in show. Well, I mean, how many people in Ventura, number one, are listening, number two, are going to call? And so he called himself. He made up his own phone calls, and that's how he developed his characters. And I won't be doing that because you're going to call in, right? Or you're going to be listening to Jerry Lewis singing You'll Never Walk Alone. You take your choice. 800-520-1534. This is Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice where I tell you you have absolutely no case. We now know where actress Lori Loughlin is going to be serving her prison sentence. What a lot of people don't know is that when someone goes to prison with a white-collar crime kind of thing, this was white-collar, it's not as if she embezzled money from an organization or held someone up or burglarized a home or even worse on a violent felony. This was white-collar, financial crime. And it was white-collar where it was people specifically weren't ripped off. In this, all you could argue is there were students that would have gotten into USC, but for her daughter getting that spot, and Lori Loughlin paid $500,000 with her husband to get in. So she got tagged. She, along with everybody else pled, and she ended up with 2 months in prison. You can ask the judge for a prison near you, for family members, close, so they can visit. There's a whole bunch of different prisons around the country. One of the best ones is Victorville, which is near Los Angeles, a couple hour drive, hour and a half drive maybe. And here's how it works. Federal prisons like that are called Club Fed for a reason. Most of them are open campuses. You can walk right off if you want. Now, no one's crazy enough to walk right off, because if you walk right off, that's a prison escape. And now you're ending up in at least a medium security prison, which is no fun. Here you have dormitories, 2- and 4-person cubicles with a common room. Job positions involve driving, working in food, trash services. You can do plumbing, painting, groundskeeping, education. Also, the institution has an auto parts warehouse. employing 36 female inmates, providing inventory services for the facility. It's not a bad way to go. I mean, clearly it's not a good way to go, but if you're going to go to prison, this is the way to do it, which is why people are upset about financial crimes. There is one prison in Otisville, New York, and this is known where primarily Jewish prisoners go for financial crimes. Jews don't burglarize very much when they commit crimes. It's usually financial crimes. And this is a prison that holds Friday night services, will serve kosher food. You can buy a yarmulke from the dispensary. It's the only place in the country you can do that. $6. What a rip. I mean, I got to tell you, that's expensive for a yarmulke. You know, it shouldn't cost more than a buck and a half. Just saying. But anyway, she is going to Victorville. Her husband is going to Lompoc, which is a little bit tougher, and it is also a financial crime facility. 800-520-1534. Let's do it. All right, Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Bill.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Yeah, this is a landlord-tenant question. Me and my two roommates live on a property that had three homes on it, but it is a truck facility, a truck storage facility. And the landlord came up to two of my roommates and said that if his insurance goes up, he will try and evict us. Can he legally do that?
Sure. He can't now because you have the eviction moratorium because of COVID, but of course he can. Or he can just ask you to leave. Is there a lease?
We've been here for 6 years.
And you haven't re-signed a lease, so you're on a month-to-month.
Yeah, we re-signed. The last one was about 4 years ago.
Okay, but how long did that last? How long was the lease before it disappeared?
No, actually, I think we're still on a lease because we've been here 6 years.
That doesn't matter. The length of time you're there means nothing. The lease that you signed 4 years ago, how...
It says nothing about insurance.
I don't care. When is that lease over?
It is a month to month.
Then that's not a lease. If it's month to month, yes, he can kick you out. Yes. He can evict you. First, he asks you to leave. You say no. Then he evicts you. And the answer is yes, except now because of COVID. And the fact that there's trucks on it, as long as the property is legally there, and I don't know what the zoning is, and it could be that you have a mixed zoning where you can put residential on top of commercial. I mean, that happens all the time with retail stores underneath apartments. So the short answer to your question is yes, and the long answer, if I had to go through it, is yes. All right. Good for you.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Felix, getting a lot of questions about evictions. Yes, Felix, what can I do for you?
My question is not about evictions. My question is about employment. In January, I took a temporary job with the U.S. Census Bureau, working in an office as a clerk. And last month in August, I was terminated. I think it was a wrongful termination. Is there anything I can do about that?
Okay, let's talk about why you think you were wrongfully terminated.
Well, the
reason we're speaking too slowly?
No. The reason that my supervisor gave was that I directly contacted one of our contractors.
Okay. Did you?
Yes, I did.
Was there a policy against it?
Not that I know of.
Okay,
but
was it
a written policy?
All right, but were you told about it?
After the fact, I was told.
Okay. All right. So you saying you didn't do it? She did. She said you did. And did you ask, since I didn't know I even did it, how did you find out? And which contractor did I ostensibly contact? Oh, you're saying you did. You just didn't know you shouldn't. And you're saying, do you have a wrongful termination? Probably not.
Yes.
You're going to sue the government. How long is that job anyway? When does that end?
It would have ended probably in October.
Okay, how long were you then not working that you should have worked? From the time you were terminated to the time the job ended, how long would that period be?
Well, I was terminated on August the 28th, and the job would have probably ended not later than the end of October.
Okay, so 2 months, basically, right?
Yeah.
You want to sue for wrongful termination for 2 months. And how much money are we talking about here?
Oh, it would be less than $5,000.
Wow, you're getting $2,500 a month? Okay.
I was getting...
Not bad. All right, and are you collecting unemployment?
I have applied for unemployment, but I haven't started receiving it yet.
All right, and so... assuming you're going to get unemployment, that has to be reduced. So let me give you a quick answer. No, you're not going to be able to sue for wrongful termination. Not a chance. Not under these circumstances. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk.
Come back. Bill Handel here. It is a Saturday morning. As we continue on, 11 o'clock, it's Leo LaPorte here on KFI, AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. 800-520-1534 is the number to call. 800-520-1534. This is Handel on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Jake, tell me your problem, and I will try to care. Go ahead.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
So I was sitting in my car. It was on a tiny street, a cul-de-sac that people should normally be going at the maximum, maybe 10 and 15 miles an hour, if that. And this woman was coming probably about 45 to 50, and... almost blew my door off. So I was just getting out, but I saw her coming. So I was going to pull the door back in. Had I done that, I would probably be an amputee right now.
Yeah.
So I just scooted it over to the right a little bit. And I haven't gotten any professional advice, but most people are saying that it's going to be my fault. And she's going to end, I'm going to have to pay for her door and my door because I'm
okay.
The one that will.
Here's the issue. She cannot hit you, clearly, if she hits you, if you're parked and comes behind you and hits you. That's the basic rule. You're also not allowed to open a door in front of oncoming traffic. If you're parked at the side of the road and a car is going past you and you open the door in front of the car, you are at fault. However, the argument is going to be, hey, I opened the door. There was plenty of time. She was speeding down the road. And then it becomes a he said, she said. And I'll tell you what's probably going to happen, Jake, is you're going to pay for your door. You're going to pay for she's going to pay for her door. And what the important part is you have your insurance company make sure that you're not tagged with a at-fault accident, because that's what you don't want. But since there's no injury, it's no big deal. Have you had any other accidents in the last year or two?
No.
All right, then I think you'll be okay, because usually you have one forgiveness. But you call your insurance company. If she files a claim against you, have you gotten a letter yet, a claim against you?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
turn it over to your insurance company. That's all. And they'll take a statement, and you tell them what happened. She was speeding. I opened the door, and then I looked back, and she was coming so fast, I had to get out of the way, and she tore my door off. And okay. It's her fault. That's your argument, okay?
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Yep, it's that simple. Okay, Tom. Hi, Tom. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I had a traffic accident in my motorhome. The driver did a U-turn in front of me. There's no way to miss him. They're accepting responsibility for it, their insurance company. The estimate of the repairs is like $13,000. The value of the motorhome, which is 22 years old, is only slightly more than that. And because it's within 90%, they want to total it out,
yeah,
pay me only the value of it, and then I'm stuck with just about buying some used motorhome. And I said,
right,
I want to get it fixed. If there's any extra cost, I'll pay for it. And they're willing to do that. But to do that, I have to agree not to sue the other driver for any other out-of-pocket that I'm stuck with. And they want to have it registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles as a salvage, which means when I want to sell it in the future,
yeah, it's useless.
Next to nothing.
Right. So just get the money. You're right. So what happens is you're going to get it repaired. It's going to be a salvage vehicle, which means whatever value you think that motor vehicle will be worth, you can cut that in half. So you have to release liability, which you would anyway. So if that's your only cost, I'm assuming there's no personal injury or any of that. So.
No, I wasn't injured at all.
Okay, all right. So that's not a big deal, releasing a liability against the driver for anything else. You know what the damages are. The issue is salvage. And if you're okay, if you're going to drive this thing into the ground, it doesn't matter. If you're going to keep driving it for years where it effectively becomes scrap anyway, or close to scrap, who cares? You're not going to get hurt. If you plan on selling it in the next couple of years or in 3 years, you're going to sell it for nada because it's salvage. It's your call.
Right.
But they can do it. So what's your question?
Do I have a case that I don't want to get it listed as salvage because when it's fixed, it's perfectly operational.
Right. I once had a car that was perfectly operational. It was salvaged, and I got nothing for it. No. Those are their terms right there. You are changing their terms. They said, we have the right to either pay you the value or we can total it. And you're saying, tell you what, give me the, and they decided to total it. So you're saying, let's change that. I'll pay, you give me the money of the value, whatever extra I'll pay, and don't salvage it. They're saying no. You're changing the deal, and we're saying no.
All right.
That's the way it works. Now, let me tell you about Norton 360. If you've recently gotten a device, a new device, you're no doubt leaving your personal information on it, exposed to criminals, cyber criminals. Your new tablet, PC, smartphone, or any device leaves you open, vulnerable to cyber threats like ransomware, malware, spyware. Well, you can stay a lot more private and secure with Norton 360. Keeps those prying eyes out. Here's what you get with Norton 360. Real-time protection against existing and emerging threats, including the device on the security on the device, a VPN, virtual private network that uses bank-grade encryption to keep your information private, a password manager that creates and stores and manages your passwords and credit card information and other credentials. This is real protection. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime, but Norton 360, this is a powerful ally. Get up to 50% off your first year with an annual subscription at Norton.com/handle. I've been a happy camper customer for years. Norton.com/handle. Norton.com/handle. This is Handle on the Law. This is KFI AM 640 live on iHeartRadio.com, Apple, you know where to go. Just go to wherever you're going and you'll get our show. Damn, I'm good at this stuff, aren't I? Yeah. 800-520-1534. At least I got the phone number correct. 800-520-1534. And welcome back to Handle on the Law. Ron has an interesting yet not a very bright question. Ron, can I help you?
Yes, you can. Hi,
yes,
Bill.
What can I do? Yes, sir.
I was an executor for my parents' living trust. They both passed last year. I sold their house this year, And being the executor, I distributed the money already to the other two beneficiaries. It was myself, my brother, and my nephew. And so I wanted to do the right thing, so I called my tax man, told him what was going on. But now I'm getting different conflicting stories that I don't have to call my tax man and claim this money.
Well, what you do have to do as the executor is pay any taxes that are owed by the deceased. God, I love we say that, the deceased. How about this? The dead people. That works out a little better. Here's the way it goes, is all taxes that are owed by them have to be paid through the estate. Any borrowing has to be paid first before distribution. Two kinds of loans that they have. One is a secured loan where there are deeds or there's a UCC-1 or some kind of security against the property, whether real or personal property, like equipment, et cetera. Then what's left goes to the beneficiaries.
Okay.
And so, you know, what did your parents owe in taxes? Any idea?
Well, everything was paid off.
Okay, so that's good.
Yeah, so, you know.
So you're fine. And you're fine.
Okay, so, but when I talk to my tax man, he says that I have to get the value of the house when it was sold. I have to get the Social Security for my brother and my nephew, which I cannot do because we're not really talking. He wants to the EIN letter from the IRS.
Yeah, this is procedural stuff. What they're doing is just simply making sure there are no taxes owed. But there are no taxes owed based on what you said. There also is no inheritance tax because the numbers are so low. I'm assuming you're not distributing more than $11 million to each person, right?
I am not, no.
Okay, then you should be pretty good. There's no inheritance tax up to, I don't know how many million. They change that all the time, but you're in good shape.
So I don't have to go through my tax man to let him know?
I don't think so. I wouldn't, because here's what happened. You don't do it. If he says you have to do it, I mean, how much money are we talking about that was distributed?
$450,000.
Yeah, among, what, three people?
Right.
Yeah, it's a hassle to do. I don't think they're going to go after you. Because in the end, let's say they go after you, you show them you don't know that there was no money owing.
I gotcha.
Yeah, there's no downside. Now, are they going to go, well, you had to and you violated the law, et cetera, et cetera? You know what? I'm a regular guy, right? I'm a regular guy. I didn't even know that existed. All I know is I'm a beneficiary and an executor, and I did it, and I made sure no taxes were owed. I made sure there are no debts. And by the way, they don't care about debts. The IRS only cares about taxes owed. You can have all the debts in the world. I think you're fine. I wouldn't. I think you're all right.
Okay.
All right, good.
That
it is good.
Mind at ease.
Good. I'm glad. And when you call me from prison, I'll tell you how you get out. All right, Sam. Sam, you're up. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Handel.
Yes.
My question for you, my brother is going through a divorce, one of those ugly divorces. Now, the judge took her to a trial, put a date on a trial, and it's on February. Now, the house he owned, he borrowed the money, $170,000, borrowed from me to put a down payment and purchase the house. Now, as a community property, is this money?
Okay, when you loaned, when you loaned him the money, let's start with you loaned him the money as separate property. All right, let's assume that you weren't loaning the community separate property. When he bought the house, how was title on the house taken? Who owns the house on the title?
He's the owner.
I'm talking about now. I don't care. Now, who owns title? What title is in what name?
In both names.
Yeah, that's it. They're done. Conversation's over. It's community property.
And the loan before it's before he got married, it's not belongs to him.
Well, did they pay it? Wait a sec. Did they pay the loan with community assets? They paid the loan with his with his income, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's screwed. I think the court's going to view that as community property. I really do.
For me, the whole thing.
Yeah, the house. Yeah, the house. I'll tell you what his mistake was. Okay, two mistakes. Your mistake, his mistake. First mistake that he made was getting married to this woman. Second mistake was you letting him get married to this woman.
When he got engaged, we told him, we beg you, we don't need this.
All right, so you begged him. All right, so maybe it's not your mistake. All right, good. So you begged him, and he's an idiot. Congratulations. All right, Robert. Hey, Robert, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a family member that's facing felony charges, and he owns weapons. And if he's convicted, obviously we're in California, they can't have weapons. I'm wondering how I should go about, you know, either getting them registered in my name or getting them out of his name.
Well, that's what you do. He transfers the registration to you, so you're the only owner. I mean, that's easy. The judge is going to make him give up his weapons anyway. So,
yeah,
that's not a problem. And, the judge isn't going to make him throw him in the river. The judge is going to say, give up your weapons. And there you are taking your weapons. Now, I'm going to suggest that he not be near those weapons because that's also a crime.
Sort of distance him from the weapons. Since
good. What does that mean, distancing him from the weapons?
Basically taking him away.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's distancing from. Does he come over to the house and visit?
I live with him.
That is a problem. So what I would do is put him in a gun safe and make sure he doesn't have access to it. And I don't even know if that's going to fly. I think that will. But that's still the argument is he is in a place with weapons.
I mean, he hasn't even had pretrial yet, so...
That until he's convicted, there's no problem.
Okay.
He has not been ordered to give up the guns yet, has he?
Not that I know of. No.
Okay, if he hasn't, he's not been convicted. He hasn't committed any. He's not been convicted of any crime. He's been charged. What if he's acquitted? So until that time, and then you want to ask, once the conviction happens, what's his felony? What's his felony?
It's internet crimes.
Oh. You know what? It's interesting. So it's not any weapon. You have to talk to a criminal attorney on this one and ask the question because it's a technical issue. Would a gun safe work that he doesn't have access to? I don't know. Since it was not a violent felony, does that change anything? Does a nonviolent felony fall into the same category as not being within any kind of weapon and it's simply a felony? I don't know. But until he's convicted, you're okay, or he's okay.
Yeah.
All right, this is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI. AM 640.
And welcome back. KFI AM 640 live on the iHeartRadio app. Let's get right to it. Welcome back to Handle on the Law. Charles. Hi, Charles. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, how are you, Bill? I was wondering, please hear me out if you can. And I was wondering if I have a malpractice lawsuit against a doctor.
For what?
For giving bad advice on TV. And I'm talking about, I like to call him the killer Drew Pinsky because he seems to be the house doctor on Fox News and Fox News Networks and affiliates. And he's like, playing this virus down like if it's a lot less infected than tuberculosis or if it can't be passed around like that. And he tells people not to wear masks and this and that. And he doesn't even have like his certifications on the wall or anything behind him.
Well, you're talking about Drew Pinsky?
The killer Pinsky, yes.
Yeah, no, Drew, he's a real doctor. He's a medical doctor.
So why are you giving this bad advice?
Because excuse me. Hold on, just for a moment, okay? Let's just go through it, all right? You say it's bad advice, and let me ask you, Charles, you say it's bad medical advice. On what basis are you giving a medical opinion?
On the same that I feel he is without information, without data.
Well, wait a sec, but he is a medical doctor. Do you understand? And you're saying, and you are saying, you are giving your medical opinion that his medical advice is no good. Do you see where I'm going with this, Charles?
No, no, I hear you. But now here you go. Here's another one example. Now, do you think he has more authority over Fauci?
What does that have to do with anything? He's a doctor. It's not a question of authority. See, you're talking authority.
Yes.
You asked the question. Does he have more authority over Fauci?
Huh?
Want me to answer the question? Does he have more authority over Fauci? No. And Fauci doesn't have more authority over him. Okay, I've answered that question. Any other questions?
Yes. Like, if you've seen the Fox News,
I have.
It's on record that he's, in my opinion, that's why I was asking. I need to find a medical malpractice doctor.
What and how have you and how have you been damaged? By the way, let's say
people not wearing a mask, but people
for 3 months. How have you been damaged? Because when you're suing for medical malpractice, you have to be damaged. How have you been damaged?
No, that's exactly what I'm asking, because I know it's hard to malpractice.
You're right. So here it is. Charles,
I love him.
Okay, as idiotic as this question was, and believe me, you've hit levels of idiocy that are phenomenal, up and down. I mean, you probably hit 5-6 levels of idiocy. You haven't been damaged. He may be giving bad advice, but you're not in a position to say he is or isn't, because you're not a medical doctor. It is his medical opinion, and he's a television doctor, like I'm a radio lawyer.
Legal advice.
He's
giving marginal advice.
No, he's giving. You could call it marginal. I understand, because I know I'm giving marginal legal advice. But the point is, he is not practicing on you. He is giving general information, and he believes in his medical opinion. He can do it. Believe it. Don't believe it. No, there's no case there. And I understand it's more of a political position that you're saying from you. I understand that you believe I understand everybody. You think everybody should wear a mask. I agree with that. But that's not a medical opinion. And yours is not a medical opinion. What you're doing is you're making a political opinion, as stupid as it sounds. But thank you so much for that.
Oh, bless you.
All right. That's good for you. All right, Charles, let's have lunch sometime, okay? And then I'll really be impressed with you. Now, the FBI cyber division warning students and families we're increasingly vulnerable. Actually, all of us are, because of the online learning and working at home and the continuing use of the internet for everything. Since the start of the pandemic alone, there has been a 300% increase in cybercrime activity. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet. Cyber criminals keep finding new ways to steal identities, and that's the holy grail of cybercrime. And if you're just monitoring your credit, you're going to miss certain identity threats, and this is where LifeLock comes in. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. For example, your Social Security number for sale on the dark web. And the dark web is that hidden part of the web where the bad guys buy and sell your information. If LifeLock detects your information being used, they'll send you an alert. You deal with it right now. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction, every business, but here's what LifeLock is offering. Get a free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. You can save up to 25% off your first year with LifeLock. That's LifeLock.com/scan. Promo code handle. You have to put that. Promo code handle. Free dark web scan. LifeLock.com/scan. Promo code handle. This is Handle on the Law. KFI AM 640. Bill Handel here on a Saturday morning. And we have lines open. Top of the hour. 800-520-1534. If you have a legal question, which I answer marginally. So if you have a marginal legal question, you get me. And the number is 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. And I want to point something out that's very important, and a lot of people probably realize that my legal advice is absolutely free, and you're still overpaying. 800-520-1534 is the number, and we have lines open, which usually happens when we start any hour. 800-520-1534. And if you call right now, you get a six knife set of steak knives. That's absolutely not true, but I like to get people excited. I don't know why steak knives are my big giveaway. I have no idea. This is Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. What a case in Roseville, California. A lawsuit against a Starbucks where a man claims that Starbucks, an order, left him disfigured. He was at a Roseville Starbucks, and he says the lid on his hot tea came loose and the drink spilled over his hands, his stomach, his thighs, his genitals. He said, the attorney, it fell on the windowsill. Obviously, it was a drive-thru, and then came over him. Third-degree burns on his fingers, second- and third-degree burns on in his pelvic area. He spent 22 days in the burn unit. Spent 11 days in the burn unit. He's 22 years old. Spent 11 days in the burn unit at UC Davis Medical Center. The attorney says his injuries were so severe that intimacy is now painful and awkward, and he can no longer play the piano, particularly with his penis, because that was burned also to a great extent. Now, the attorney said the nerves have grown back and healed back, and he's learned to walk again. And these pretty serious injuries. And he says it's their fault. And Starbucks come back saying we're evaluating the claim. And then inevitably, our partners take great pride in ensuring our beverages are crafted with care. That typical stuff. Delivered to our customers safely. We take our responsibility to provide a safe environment seriously. We'll continue to do so. Our customers' junk is very important to us. We want them to be able to go home and shtup without a lot of pain. I mean, that's the philosophy of Starbucks. Now, as crazy as it sounds, you remember the case, the Stella Awards, where Stella, this woman, was driving through the McDonald's and a cup of coffee burned. I think it either lid fell off or maybe it burned through the bottom of the cup. And she got a $2.3 million award, or $3.4 million, and everybody went berserk. How can you get that much? And and now Stella Awards indicate overpaying for an award ridiculously. Well, let me tell you, they didn't, and she got the reasonable amount of money, even though the court later on kicked it back. And that's because, first of all, she was wearing capri pants. She should have been sued for wearing capri pants. That's for starters. Who the hell wears capri pants? But the pants, as the coffee spilled, absorb the hot water instantly, the hot liquid. So the hot liquid stays against the skin. And she was burned pretty severely in her genital area. And there was an email that was sent at McDonald's. That was an intern email saying, we think there's a risk. People have been burnt. And an executive said, our customers want hot coffee. Let's take the risk. That's what the jury heard. Yeehaw. That's how you get an award. What's going to happen here? Who the hell knows? You know, I mean, you've been married a while. So the guy doesn't have sex for 5 years. You know, please. There's already somebody on the jury goes, hey, I haven't been laid for 12 years. You think I'm going to give money for 5 years? Pam, let's start with you.
Good.
Hey, Pam. Yes.
I was added as a joint tenant to my mom's condo after she incurred some debts attached to that condo. My question is, now I'm the only one because she died. Do I have to do anything about those debts?
Well, yeah. Well, if it's secured against the condo itself, yeah, the money is owed. and it's the mortgage holder who can call the loan.
There's no mortgage.
There's no mortgage. Well, and you transfer the property. No, the debts stay on the property, and you owe the money. That's it. Or the property owes the money because it's secured against the property. Now, she technically owns it, but it's secured with the property, which means that they have first call. So upon the transfer, it's a very interesting question. Upon the transfer to you, the debt holder can go ahead and force either the sale or through a refinance. But yeah, the debt remains. You don't just walk away with a debt, especially on the property, a secure debt.
If I'm a senior citizen and it's my residence,
nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. How old are you in terms of senior citizen?
72.
You know, 72 is the new 71. You know that? It's not that big a deal. Justin. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
My neighbor built a fence that blocks access to the back half of my property. I've got a pond that, especially when it's really rainy out, the pond extends pretty much the entire property, so my only access is through the back.
Okay.
My neighbor built a fence there, so I can't access the back half of my property. I also have an easement that allows me access where he built the fence, and I was wondering what I can do about that.
Yeah, okay. First of all, do you have a heavy equipment rental yard anywhere near you?
I have a chainsaw.
Yeah, no, the chainsaw isn't nearly as impressive as bringing a tractor in and just going through the fence. That makes a statement. Clearly, he is in violation in a couple of areas. He's in violation of the easement, and he's also in violation of effectively a constructive easement, which means even if it wasn't recorded, he can't block your access to your property. So you tell him, move it. You call him up and you go, hey, move it. And if he refuses to do it, then he gets a lawyer letter. And if he refuses to deal with that, then you have to go to court and get a court order to do it. And hopefully statutorily, there's something on the books that you even get attorney's fees. I don't know. Statutes allowing attorney's fees are all over the place. Attorney's fees usually are contractual, and occasionally they're statutory. Workers' comp by statute and civil rights violations by statute, the opposing side or the prevailing side. Incidentally, only the plaintiff gets attorney's fees. If the defendant wins, attorney's fees don't fly. It's really weird in those cases. But yeah, he's in violation all over the place.
So can I destroy it? I mean,
I wouldn't. No, it's on his property. You have You have to do it legally. It's a wooden.
I was hoping to just drop it down.
Yeah, I know. No, you can't. Is it a wooden fence?
It's got wooden posts, but it's like a wire, chicken wire.
Okay.
But I could just chop the wooden posts. You know,
yeah. You can't because it's his. It's not on your property. Okay. It's on his property, right?
It's right by the property line, yeah. But I don't know where the line is.
That helps, but it doesn't matter. He's not allowed to stop your egress and digress and progress, and I don't know those legal terms. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
And good morning, Bill Handel here. It is a Saturday morning. Welcome back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Angie, why don't we start with you as a segment. Hello, Angie.
Hello, Bill. Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
What's an infraction?
An infraction is a violation that is really not a criminal violation. It goes felony, misdemeanor, and then an infraction. It's more of a traffic ticket. You don't go to jail unless you have a bunch of them.
I did go to jail.
What happened?
Open container.
You had an open container? And that was it?
Drinking a White Claw. Yeah.
Okay. And it was an open container. I don't know if did they tag you as an infraction? Because I think that's a misdemeanor. Just an open container, and they arrested you for open container, which they do. That's the law, but it's only considered an infraction?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I spent 6 hours in Huntington Beach jail.
You spent how long?
6 hours.
6 hours, and they let you go. Well, here's what probably ended up happening, is you were arrested on a misdemeanor, and then they kicked it down to an infraction, is probably they did. They charge you, because you don't get tagged. You do not go to jail on an infraction. They do not arrest you on an infraction. I mean, you have to have committed a misdemeanor. Yeah, infraction, something's wrong there. So
I have a court date.
Because you violated the law. Oh, don't misunderstand. So they wrote you, when did they write you a ticket?
On Friday, and September 11th.
Okay, so what happened? You get stopped? You weren't stopped.
I was in the Stater Brothers parking lot, and there's this homeless guy that I like to talk to because he's an old professor that kind of checked out of life, and I was sharing a drink with him, and the cops just rolled up on us and arrested me right away, and they let him walk
open
away.
So open container drinking in public.
Yes.
And they arrested you for drinking in public.
Right.
And so did they actually, an infraction, you normally get a ticket. Did they write you a ticket right there? But you're saying they arrested you.
No, they arrested me right there.
All right. And so what paperwork did they give you when they let you go 6 hours later?
Just this yellow one that says that I have to appear on like November 12th.
And where does it say infraction on the document?
It has numbers.
Okay.
Intoxication.
Have you looked?
Container.
Right. Have you looked up the numbers?
PC-47.
Okay. Have you looked it up? Have you looked that up?
How do I do that?
You go to the civil. You go to the Code of Civil Procedure. You go to the Civil Code, actually, State of California. But how do you know that's an infraction?
Because she was very nice, the lady that let me go after. Well,
And she said it was I took a mugshot for it. What did she say?
She said you probably won't even have to appear in court. Just call them because this is only an infraction.
I think she's wrong.
Okay.
Open container is an infraction. I think that is a misdemeanor. I was wondering where that went. All right, Sam. Hello, Sam.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I was born in the state of New York, and my birth certificate application was denied. They didn't explain why. They just sent it back, said it was denied, and I needed to submit paperwork for a delayed birth certificate.
Okay.
Problem being, I was born at home, and a delayed birth certificate takes a lot more evidence that I don't have.
Okay, were you ever issued a birth certificate?
Never issued one.
So you don't
basically
have a birth certificate. Okay, so wait a sec.
Right.
You don't have a birth certificate.
Right.
Okay, and you're asking for a delayed birth certificate now. All right. And they sent you an application, and it has a bunch of information they need from you, and your question is?
The information can't be had. So they're only willing to accept one affidavit from someone who was there at my birth. They want stuff from doctors. No doctors there.
All right. So you explain
that.
They want
a whole bunch of evidence that I can't provide.
Then what you do is provide what you can provide. And
I've already done it 3 or 4 times, submitted the evidence I do have 3 or 4 times. It keeps getting denied. They're just like, not enough.
All right. Well, now you have to go up because this is a county recorder's office and you have to. And that's an administrative decision. So it has to be waived. Those administrative decisions have to be waived. And so you have to go up the ladder. There's no other way of doing it because technically they can say, OK,
I've already gone up the ladder. I can't remember the name of the office, but it's many, many more times higher than the county officials. I've already tried hiring 2 or 3 different attorneys, lawyers.
Yeah, because they probably don't.
They say they'll look into it. They don't make it anywhere.
Have you talked to your county elected official supervisor? Have you gone to the supervisor's office?
So one of the other problems I'm also facing is I was born in New York in the early 90s, but I now live in Virginia.
It doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
Why would you think that matters?
Well, it matters because my residence now as an adult, being in Virginia, not New York, has been an issue for them.
I don't understand that one at all, because people, strangely enough, do move. So I don't get that. You got caught between a rock and a hard place. So one of two things are happening. You're an administrative nightmare or you were never born. And I'm talking to a very strange entity right now. My guess is probably.
Oh, it is very, very strange. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had this experience before. I've never had a question like this. So I think you're going to have to go to your county official, a supervisor, and need some help here. And that's all you can do. Worst comes to worst, you go to court. You simply file a motion in front of the court, and the court will order the birth certificate to be issued based on.
Right.
Okay, that's all you can do. And you have to actually file a suit. And I don't know what else to tell you. What's the problem?
I have pursued stuff like this. The problem is with filing and dealing with the court system. Their first reaction to any of these things I try to do is they don't believe me. So they think that I'm another person.
Oh, okay, but you still
to disguise, get a new identification somehow.
Okay, well, you have to overcome that, don't you? You have to go to court and you have to overcome that. And at this point, if you can't go through the county supervisor to help you out, then you have to go to court. And, if the court says, no, I don't believe you, then you probably have the wrong lawyer or you'll never get a birth certificate. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, that's a weird position. All right. I'll tell you what else is a weird position is when you are online, whether you're learning as a student or using teleconferencing or whatever you're doing online, we are so increasingly vulnerable to cyber attacks. Since the start of the pandemic, there have been a 300% increase in cybercrime activity. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet. Cyber criminals keep finding new ways to steal identities every day. And you certainly are going to miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit. So let me suggest LifeLock. I've been a customer for over a decade, and these folks know what they're doing. This is protection. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. That's the hidden part of the internet that the bad guys buy and sell your information. Now, if LifeLock detects your information being used illegally or wrongly, they'll send you an alert, which you can deal with. Now, no one can prevent all ID theft or monitor every transaction, every business, but here's what LifeLock is offering. A free dark web scan, lifelock.com/scan, promo code handle. You can also save up to 25% off your first year with a promo code handle. Free scan, lifelock.com/scan, promo code handle. This is Handle on the Law. Welcome back. Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you have no case. Hi, Linda. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm on a managed care Medicare program through Kaiser.
Yep.
I get a medication and I pay $47 a month copay. For 5 months, I've been doing this. They sent me a nasty gram saying, oopsie, we made a mistake. Your copay is $548, and we want the money for the 5 months you only paid $47.
Okay, it's $500 and change per month?
Yes.
Or is that over five months?
No, that's for a month. It's called Forteo. It's for osteoporosis. It's injectable.
Wow. Okay, and they don't have... It's covered, and it's under, they don't have a generic for it, right?
No, there is no generic.
Okay. All right. So, you owe the money. Now, the question is, how do they collect the money? You call them up, and you go, hey, I can't afford this. I mean, there is no way I'm going to be able to come up with $2,500 tomorrow afternoon.
Exactly.
So, you start negotiating with them. Like you always, you can negotiate with any medical provider, and you say, I'm broke. How much money do you get a month?
I get $1,200 a month.
And that's what you live on, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's tough.
It is.
Yeah.
I understand. When I went to the pharmacy this month, they told me it was going to be $745, and I said, "What?"
All right.
They said, "Well, we made a mistake," and I did not get the medicine.
Yeah,
I don't have the medicine.
Yeah, you're clearly not being able to get that medicine because it's too expensive. They may have programs with the manufacturer, the pharmaceutical company itself.
Working with Lilly. I'm just worried about this money, Kaiser.
Yeah, if you don't have, they're not going to sue you for it. You don't have it, you don't have it, and I don't think they're going to throw you out of the system because you can't pay and you're living on $1,200 a month. You have to make an appointment to go see someone in membership or someone in. Billing and try to go as high as you can and just sit down and start negotiating. What I would do is take a photo of a dumpster and say, this is where I live, because that's always good.
Do you do that?
And you go, hey, this is my house. Do you understand the problem here? And excuse me, I've been with Kaiser my entire life, and I've been okay. I've been through a bunch of surgeries. I've actually lived through most of the surgeries, which is a miracle at Kaiser. They'll talk to you. I mean, they're human beings too, and you got to say there's no way. The only thing you have to worry about is not being kicked out. That's what you have to worry about.
I'm worried about that.
You should be.
Because I like Kaiser.
I do too. I do too. They've only killed three of my relatives. And
one of mine.
Okay. Oh, they've only killed. Well, see, you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah,
you are way ahead. But that's the bottom line. I mean, you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. They're never going to get their money from you. You're obviously not going to be able to afford this medication. So you have to go to Lilly. That makes it. And hopefully they have a program. And most do. Most pharmaceutical companies have a program where they'll work with you. And then just talk to membership and just beg. And I mean, they could theoretically throw you out, but I've never heard of that happening. Anyway, good luck. That's a tough place to be for sure. Well, all right, John. Hello, John. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you, Bill. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, Bill. My name is John.
Yes, it is.
I currently live in California. I have, I exist in California, put it that way.
You're not alone.
I have property that was passed on to the family from my mother about 15 years ago. The property only consists of about 1 acre. However, there are 11 heirs. The property is located in Alabama. I pay the taxes every year on time. I allow my cousin to utilize a portion of the land for church parking with no charge. I am concerned, Bill, about maybe there being some legal concerns that I should be aware of. Because I have not liquidated the property.
Yeah, you don't have to. You never have to liquidate the property. Now, was it handed to your 11 heirs? Was there a will attached to the transfer of the property?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so has it been distributed and you now have 11 owners of the property?
There were other items. There were other assets to be liquidated. I liquidated all of
Okay, so now you have... Okay, all right. So you're the executor. Got it. Now let's talk about the property. So you did a good job with everything else. Now you have the property issue. The title, whose name is on title? Is it all 11 of the heirs?
No, it's just my mom.
Okay, so it's still in the name of a dead person?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's held by the estate. So you want to know what the legal ramifications at this point there aren't any. As long as the taxes are being paid, Alabama is not going to foreclose on it for taxes. That's all they care about is taxes being paid, and they'll grab the property. You're allowed to have property that you never step foot on, and that can be handed down through 26 generations. And as long as the taxes are paid, that is the magic here, taxes.
That was my concern.
Yeah, Bill. No, you're fine. There's something called adverse possession, which people can actually grab your property if it's been abandoned, and they do it openly and notoriously, which means everybody knows, and they squat on it. But as long as taxes are being paid, that is the magic. No one's taken away your property with the taxes. So you're fine. And if any one of you can force the sale of the property, by the way, any one of you. This is Handle on the Law. And, all right, let me do that again. Good morning, Handle here. Let's go back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Hillary, it's your turn. What can I do for you, Hillary?
Hi there. I was working at a dog daycare facility that does boarding and grooming and rescue. I was terribly attacked by one of the dogs there, a rescue.
Mm.
I had to be hospitalized for 2 days. Then I got another infection, colitis, from all the antibiotics I was on. So I'm covered by workers' comp. They're covering my hospital bills. But my question is, can I sue for pain and suffering beyond that? Because this place really does not vet the dogs that they have and that they're showing to potential adoptees.
How do you vet a dog, a rescue dog? Just curious.
Well, if someone comes in and turns in a dog and says they attacked me, I can't take it, but I don't want to turn it into a pound because they'll kill it. So this place will take the dog and try and find a
foot. All right. And what do they do with the dog if it still attacks people? They euthanize it, right?
Yes. And in fact, when I was attacked, they called the previous owner and said, come pick up the dog. They picked up the dog. They took it to a shelter to be euthanized. And then the place where I worked said, no, we're not euthanizing. We want the dog back. We'll save it. We'll retrain it, whatever. So the priority was to the dog and not to their human employee that was attacked and hospitalized. Yeah. And I don't want this to happen to somebody else. So can I sue for pain and suffering?
No, you can't. And I'll tell you why. Because first of all, let's talk about the whole concept of workers' comp. We have a no-fault state with workers' comp. If you are injured on the job, even if it is the employer's fault, you do not get beyond workers' comp. That's why they call it a no-fault state. Also, even if there was, there's something called assumption of the risk. I mean, that's what shelters do. They take these abused dogs who turn around and attack people. And you knew about it because you work in there. I'm assuming you had some kind of expertise, and you knew about it and still kept working there. You see the problem? So you don't get beyond workers' comp just because of the law itself. They don't let you. The law doesn't let you. And you knew what you were doing. That's the problem. You assumed it. So the answer is a big no. You have absolutely no case whatsoever. Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie, welcome.
About spousal benefits. I called Social Security a couple days ago, and my ex-husband passed away last month, and I found out that he actually was married within a year after our divorce. And we were married in 71 to 1980, and he married someone else in 1981, but she was still married. So I know you have to be married 10 years to to receive any benefits, and I was just curious if my marriage is technically,
First of all, from what I understand, that's 71 to 80 is 9 years, not 10, correct? So automatically at that point, you get nothing. Second of all, you get nothing after the divorce. and the fact that he was married to someone who was already married makes his marriage invalid. But Social Security people don't know that. I mean, who tells Social Security people that? But it's not your issue because you're done. You have nothing more to do with it. So all I can tell, did you like your husband when you were married?
Yeah.
And why'd you get divorced?
Well, he was dating her.
Oh!
We were still married.
And you still like him. You still liked him after the fact.
I forgive him.
Oh, you know, that's very sweet of you, I must tell you. Good for you. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're done. That's basically it. All right, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm hearing impaired and I can't hear, so I'm going to let my better half take over.
Okay.
Hi there. How are you?
Hi. Do you make fun of your husband that he's deaf?
No way. Never.
Okay. Oh, that's too bad. Do you use sign language?
No.
Okay.
He does wear hearing aids, which helps a lot, but not in situations with
phone. Fair enough. All right. What can I do for you?
Anyway, so he was married for 20 years. And the divorce was final May 8th of this year. And in the divorce decree, it states that the community property that is owned with his ex-wife was to be sold within 6 months from the date that the divorce was final. So that time is now, and she's refusing to sell, and she's refusing to leave. And he wants to know what
no.
she can do.
Okay. Okay, so she's living in the house.
She is.
Okay. Title is, it doesn't matter how title is held. The court ordered that the house be sold and she won't leave. You got to go back to the court. Your husband has to go back to the court and make sure the judge yells very loudly at him so he can understand. And you'll be fine. It's court order. So the court will order the court will order her out. And if she and force the sale. And if she doesn't go, I mean, it'll happen a few times. They'll throw her out. I mean, the judge will arrest her for contempt, so you're fine. You just have to, maybe even the divorce attorney that handled it, to go back into court. It's going to just cost some more money, but he'll get her out, no question about it. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning, Bill Handle here. On a Saturday morning, KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And we have a couple of lines open. We've been pretty good the last couple of hours with the lines. And you notice that I haven't called for phone numbers in a while. You know why? Because we have plenty of phone calls. 800-520-1534. I think we have maybe one, two lines open right now. Oh, yes. Why don't we get started? Because we have another hour to go on the show. And then after the show, I'm going to continue answering phone calls, just a heads up. So if you happen to be on the line and the show ends, just hang loose and I'll continue off the air with you. This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. Do you remember the dive boat Conception that in Southern California caught on fire? 34 people under the deck were killed as fire swept through the boat. And the only people that survived were the people on the deck that were able to jump in the water, including the captain and including some of the hands. And so what ended up happening, we knew there was going to be a huge issue, lawsuits aplenty. And here is what's going on with these boats. First of all, I believe that, and I think I'm right on, that the operators and the owners of the dive boat itself are going to be liable like crazy. The insurance company's got to start writing huge checks because of the violations. Because there were two violations that occurred, which are very important, maybe three. One of them being there is a law, a regulation, Coast Guard regulation, that aboard these vehicles, someone has to be awake and walking around, has to be on call, effectively, and guarding the boat in case anything happens. That didn't happen. Everybody was asleep. Number two There is supposed to be emergency training that is given to the crew. And in this one, one of the crew members, the day before the fire, asked the captain, aren't we going to have our emergency training? And the captain says, when we have time. And it never happened. Two major violations. That wouldn't have changed anything, I might add, because the fire swept so quickly through the boat that had those regulations even been followed, nothing would have happened, or nothing would have been able to help these people. Then there was an issue of where the boat ignited, and they really don't have an absolute, but they have an idea. Aboard the boat, there was an electrical plug system where all of the phones and the various pieces of electronic equipment were all plugged in. And one of the crew members noticed when they plugged one in earlier that evening, there was a spark, and he ignored it, didn't pay attention. Okay, those are the violations. Two absolute, one maybe. But it turns out that the boat is horribly designed. And this is where they're going to go after the owners. But here's the problem. Here's the defense, and it's a pretty good defense. The boat met code when it was designed. The boat had been inspected by the Coast Guard every year and passed. And it just so happens that when the boat was designed, it's a rotten design for safety. There are two exits from the bottom, from the underside of the boat, or in the base of the boat, you know, under the deck. And they lead to the same place. So if that same place up on the deck, a room on the deck, is on fire, there's no place to go, even with two exits. The exits themselves are very small. They should be much wider. There should be it had to be much easier for people to get out. Now, again, had that happened, would there have been survivors? We don't know. Probably not. But they are now looking at redesign of these boats and taking some real precautions. The good news for the redesign is there are sister boats that are identical, that were built at the same time. So there's a boat that they can practice on and go through exits and back and forth and not just look at a pair of blueprints. So that's what's going to happen. Oh, the captain is maybe charged with manslaughter. We don't know yet. But you can bet some big checks are going to be written. All right, let's take some phone calls. Tim, let's start with you. Hello, Tim. Welcome.
My wife and I became Transamerica insurance agents about 4 years ago. And we had the notion that we wanted to start more of a conglomerate money business. So we enlisted securities advisors, a property casualty company, whatnot, just to try and get a mortgage broker, just to get a bigger group of money people. The gal that I got in with the initial business set me up with somebody in the office to do securities licensing. And it turned out at the end of it, he was fired and did not have the license. And we were being kind of defrauded.
Okay.
Are you hearing me?
I am. I'm just curious. Okay, I'm just
sorry.
Processing.
So,
yes,
sorry,
go ahead.
Sorry, just on the phone this side. So my understanding, setting this whole thing up with a property casualty company to do an expanded platform of financial services, what was paramount in the agreement was that we would get Transamerica's name on the building. And we were guaranteed by this woman that, yes, 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 we'll do that. And it never performed. And ultimately, after 1 year, we realized it wasn't going to happen, and we just kind of shut down those relationships. Do I have any recourse to go back to her? Because we're about 110 grand out. Yeah.
All right, let's start with the promise that she made that you'll get Transamerica's name on the building. Was that was that written?
Yes. Okay. I have emails with that, yes.
All right, fair enough. And that was
and
prior.
I have emails where she actually blames the Obama administration, regulation.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine. Great, that's great.
Like,
you know,
it rolls down the hill and it's like, I don't.
Yeah, of course. But. Of course. Let's kick the, no one's ever at fault. When she introduced you to the guy who didn't have the license, was him not having a license instrumental with Transamerica not going forward with you? Did that have any influence?
I do not believe that he influenced it. He just didn't have the capacity to go forward with it.
She referred it. Yeah, there may be some liability there. Detrimental reliance. She made representations that he had the ability. Now, the defense is, how the hell did I know he didn't have the ability to go forward? Now technically it's easy. Did you have a license?
She did know because the comptroller in the office ultimately came to me and said, you know that he's not licensed and not fired. Like, everybody was running cover for this woman.
Okay, but here's the question. I just asked you, his being licensed or not, was that instrumental in you not being able to go forward and you had to shut down? Was his license pivotal to all that?
100%.
All right, then, okay. And she should have known. She represented he did have a license. Now, did you check?
That's where I'm, due diligence, 6 months late, Bill.
Six, okay.
Everyone
all
out
right.
there listening, do your due diligence.
Yeah, of course,
man.
Of course. it's sort of up in the air. I would certainly try. $110,000 is no small amount of money. Her defense is that, hey, the sophisticated business. My understanding was he did have a license. To my knowledge, he did. It was represented to me that he did. And maybe I should have gone and checked it. But certainly you should have gone and checked. It's time to talk to a business lawyer. It's that simple. It's complicated enough where everybody has an argument and everybody has a defense. And that's how it flies. And you're right. The advice you give is do your due diligence. And when people represent, and the more they're representing, the greater they are, the flakier they generally are. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI. AM 640.
KFI. AM 640. Bill Handle here. Back we go. More Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice. Jerry, you've been there for a while. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Bill, I have a problem. I live in a residential area. I've been here 20 years. And across the street, when I moved in, there's a nice tennis court. Had four courts, and people would play tennis, and it's a quiet game. But in the last 2 years, are you familiar with a game called pickleball?
They play with pickles, don't they? And it gets really squishy. Don't take a pickle with some kind of a racket, and it's a mess. Do I have that right?
No, you're close.
Oh,
though.
Okay.
Pickleball is played with paddles similar to a ping pong paddle, yet they're much bigger, and they play with like a wiffle ball. And as they hit the ball, it's a very loud noise. And with 12 pickleball courts, when they play, it is so noisy, I can't even open my front window on our house because the people are screaming and yelling. They make a point or whatever. And there's usually, when you play the game, you play, and then when the game is over, then four other people are waiting to play the game. So there can be up to 50 people waiting to play. And this goes on from 7 in the morning till 10 p.m. at night. It takes 25 to maybe 40 cars parked on our street, both sides of the street. Therefore, I have a problem.
Sure.
Family or friends come over.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah.
And they have we have a barbecue. Sometimes I have to park a block and a half away and carry everything in or park it on the house and unload it.
Got it. What's your question?
My question is there anything we can do with the city?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. That's exactly where I thought you were going to go. First of all, I'm very disappointed that there aren't real pickles being used. I had this wonderful visual, and it was just spectacular. All right. So assuming there are no real pickles and the game is described as you describe it, here's the problem you're going to have. The city has almost absolute power to do what you described, to have those pickleball, without pickles, those pickleball courts. And the courts are very leery to change up and force the city to go in a different direction. However, this is not merely the city exercising its ability to change the courts or allow a different type of person or a different type of game that therefore is it requires or the level of noise exists at a higher level. This is so interrupts your lifestyle and your enjoyment of your home that may be over the edge. That could, the way you describe it, where the city, you would have no chance against the city. I mean, zero. This one is enough of an interruption of your life and a hindrance of your ability to live a lifestyle. Yeah, I think you've got a shot at it. Now, you want to go to your council person that may or may not do something. They may limit the number of people allowed on the court waiting.
They're not willing to do anything.
Okay.
We just ask them if they put a no parking sign.
Yeah, exactly.
The
could they put a permit parking only on the street? And they said no to that?
Yes.
Okay, you go to your city council person and you do what you can do with the city council person. That's one. If the city council person and the city itself isn't going to do anything, you get to go to court. And that's a difficult one, but you have to do it. You spend the money. When the city doesn't do anything, there really is no appeals level. So you have to file a lawsuit. Now, how many of your neighbors are experiencing the same pickleball issue?
The whole street. We've had a petition. They signed it. We've got
all right. Okay. Now, how many do you think are willing to kick in some money to hire a lawyer?
That's a good question.
That's the question, because if you have a lawyer that costs $400 an hour, let's say, and there are 20 people, now you're talking $20 an hour for whatever amount of time it takes. Otherwise, you're going to have to, a small group if you're going to have to, and this is where neighbors really suck, and that is they're going to get the benefit of whatever you do and are not going to have to pay for it.
Right.
That depends on the street. But those are your alternatives, and none of them very good, and I'm astounded that the city is not willing to do anything about it. And if the council person, if you made an appointment to talk to your council person, I'm not going to get involved. Then the only issue you have, the only way you can go is go to court. And that's no fun at all.
Right.
Now, if you've recently gotten a new device, you could very well be leaving your personal information exposed to the cyber criminals. Actually, any device, we're more and more open to ransomware, malware, spyware, and more. So in order to stay private and secure in today's connected world, let me tell you what can help you enormously, and that's Norton 360. With Norton 360, you're getting real-time protection against existing and emerging threats, and you get device security on top of that, a VPN virtual private network that uses bank-grade encryption to protect your information and passwords and logins, a password manager that easily and securely creates and stores, manages your passwords, credit card info, etc. That's what Norton 360 does. Now, no one can prevent all cybercrime, but Norton 360, powerful ally, real protection. Get up to 50% off your first year with an annual subscription. Visit Norton.com/handle. Norton.com/handle. This is Handle on the Law. And good morning. Bill Handle here as we continue with the show. For those of you that are still on the phone waiting for me and I go off the air, stay tuned or stay on the phone. I'll get back to you even when we go off the air and I'll continue on. So not to sweat it. Back we go. More Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice. Hello, Bob. Bob's your uncle. Hello, yeah. Bob.
Bill?
Yes.
Yeah, Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, so I'll try to make this as brief as possible. I'm looking to possibly send a cease and desist letter based on the fact that over 10 years ago, I was unfortunately made a poor decision and was convicted of a crime. But since that time, I've done everything to rebuild my life. I've gotten my record expunged. I've made some other personal victories and strides. And I had put all that behind me. And recently, I started dating a girlfriend, you know, my new girlfriend. And her ex-husband discovered my past, and now he's telling anybody he can that I'm a convicted rapist, which isn't entirely true. And
Hold on. Were you convicted of rape?
No.
Okay. What were you convicted of?
It was called oral copulation by a government official.
Wow.
But
was there a memo issued ordering you to do that or to stop doing that? Oral copulation by I've never heard of that, by a government official.
I was a police officer and I had an affair.
Ah.
And a couple months after the affair, the person that I had the affair with was going to get arrested for something else, and then that's threw me under the bus.
Right, and then threw you under the bus and copped to it. Just a quick one. When they talked about oral copulation, mm-hmm. who to whom? Just curious. Never mind. Well, that's damn right. That's the way I do it. Okay, good for you. A quick answer is, of course, you do cease and desist, and that's straight-out defamation, by the way. You were not convicted of rape. That is straight-out defamation. And I would I'd get a lawyer letter, try to scare the crap out of the guy, and say, hey, you know what? This is defamation, and I mean it's big defamation, accusing you of a sexual crime that you did not commit, accusing you of being convicted of a crime. That is that's actually defamation per se. There are four levels of common law defamation. And this hits right in the middle of it. And one of them is business dealings, right? If you're a business person and accused of stealing and it's not true or ripping people off or misrepresenting, that's common law defamation. You got them. All you have to do is prove damages. Matter of fact, in some cases, you don't have to. The other one is, are you ready for this? Accusing a woman of not being a virgin. Attacking a woman's virginity. This goes back, let's say, a few years ago. Today, you would attack a woman for being a virgin. And that's besides the point. Three is a loathsome disease. Literally, that's the language that was used. Loathsome disease, STD, syphilis. You also have leprosy was one of those too, in terms of loathsome, but mainly venereal diseases. And the fourth one, I don't remember. But the point when this is straight out defamation, and you've got him. I'll tell you that right now. You go way more than a cease and desist. I mean, a cease and desist may do it. And just a lawyer saying, hey, and it's probably worth an hour of a lawyer's time on this one because it's pretty serious stuff. And just say, hey, big damages occur. All right. One last legal question that I think has a lot of relevance. On a 1 to 10, how was she?
Oh, come on.
All right. Just asking. Asking. Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough. Andrea. Andrea, what can I do for you?
I'm here, sir. Hi. My 18-year-old son was in a car accident, and there were 8 vehicles involved and 9 people, and he is being blamed for the accident. He paid for the vehicle, and he is the only person on the title. But insurance-wise, my husband and our son are all 3 on the insurance. Can
we, being my husband and I, be personally sued?
That's a good question. I don't think so. The fact that he didn't own the vehicle, but he was put as a driver. It's kind of interesting. He was put on as insured driver, but it's to your cars. Usually you insure cars, not people. And what they do want to know, the insurance companies, who else is driving the car? And they generally will cover. I guarantee it. I don't know the answer to this because this is an insurance question. And I would look it up if I wasn't lazy, but I'm too lazy to look it up. The answer is, I don't know. I think so. That's an easy one. Do you have an insurance agent? Who'd you buy the insurance from?
Yeah.
Then just call the insurance agent. Yeah, just call whoever you bought it from. That's, yeah, make it easy. For sure. Oh, let me see. Francine. There you go, Francine. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a retirement question. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. I had a retirement when I left a company 20 years ago. I found out that they're cashing the retirements out due to elimination of a position. But I was called February 24th of this year. They said, no, you missed the deadline. You can't cash it out anymore. Okay, I just wanted to check into it. Can you send me information about it, what I have, when I can retire, when I can collect? And they said, sure. 8 months later, no one's gotten back to me. I call back, inquire again. She says, oh, you already cashed it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whoa, they say you already cashed it out. Ooh, you got a mess on your hands. So their records show that money was given to someone, I'm assuming identity theft, right?
I guess, yes.
Yeah, probably. All right, you have to go to, is it a big company that administrates the pension?
It's huge.
Okay, they have a fraud division. And you've got to go to the
phone calls, though. I can't get past.
Yeah, no, you go to the fraud division. I think you have to email. Someone's going to answer the phone. And you call them up. You go, I need the fraud. I have to speak to the fraud division of the company that's holding the pensions. It's an administrative company that does that. And these are pension companies that do this. And that's why I asked if it was a big company. So you just have to get through it. I mean, are you really going to pay a lawyer to force the company to talk to you?
I have no idea what to do. That's what I'm
all right. Well, I just said you have to keep on going. And if they don't talk to you, then you send an email. Because when you say they don't talk to you, you call on the phone, you ask where their address is, they don't give it to you?
I never asked for their address.
I understand. But here's what I'm saying. Yeah. When you call and you say, I've had an issue with my pension being cashed out by someone that's not me, who do I talk to? They just refuse to talk?
They said they'll get back to me in 2 weeks.
Then keep on going every single day, twice a day if you have to. Follow up with emails. I just called you. You haven't called me back. You promised.
I'm doing that.
Yeah, next day. You've already done that and they still won't talk to you?
No. They say, well, we need another day. We need another 5 days.
Then at some point you have no choice. If they're not willing to talk to you, you have to have a lawyer. The court will order them to talk to you to at least have a conversation. I mean, I don't understand a major company like that simply refusing to talk to someone about transferring you to a division that can help you. I mean, I find that astounding, but I've never heard of that. I can't imagine a major corporation. That's like you want to talk to General Motors and you have an issue with your car, not talking to you. We'll call you in another day. And for months, they don't talk. You go to a lawyer and the judge says you have to talk to her. That's, I think, where you're at. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
And good morning, Bill Handel here. As we end the show, last segment, also want to remind you, hey, stay tuned at the top of the hours. I literally walk out and we go on to go on to Leo Laporte, our tech guy, because what will happen is I'll continue answering the phones right through until we run out. So hang loose, and you can call me at 800-520-1534. Even the line is busy at the end of the hour. People do hang up. So 10 minutes into it, you want to call, I'm here until everybody's call is answered. I tend to do that on Saturday mornings. My pleasure to do that. Welcome back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Kendra, that's who I want to talk to. Hi, Kendra. Yes, ma'am. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you.
Sure.
So my husband and I are in the middle of a major kitchen remodel, and of course we have the city inspectors coming out like we're supposed to. But my question is, once the city inspector is there, can they legally start looking at other things in the home?
Or
only what we're remodeling?
Well, it depends. Are they looking for violations of code in other parts of the house? What are they looking at is the question.
Well, one thing is our recessed lighting that was there when we purchased the home, I guess, is not up to code anymore. And so they want us to replace all the lighting in our home.
Wow. Yeah, they can do that. They can do that. Now, you can argue that it was grandfathered in, but if code was, if it was installed per code when it first went in, you're grandfathered in. However, if there was no permit taken, but usually when you do lighting, when you put in recessed lighting, I mean, that, I don't even know if you have to get an inspection for that. I mean, that's kind of weird, unless they had to rewire the house for that. So you can try to appeal it. You can say no and go to building and safety. But the answer is if they see a code violation, they can say we've seen a code violation. Yeah, congratulations. Christopher. Hey, Christopher. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Hi. What can I do for you?
Yes. Yes, Bill. My dad has a restraining order on me, and I was wondering, how long can he keep it on?
All right. What is the restraining order about, Christopher? What exactly does it restrain you from doing?
It's for terrorist threats.
Terrorist threats?
What? Yeah, it's against my father.
Okay. What does he say you, what did you do to utter a terrorist threat, according to your dad?
Okay. I told him that I was going to kill him, his wife, up his cars, and his house. So I was wondering, the restraining order is for 7 years, but I was wondering, can he extend it past 7 years?
Yeah. I'm assuming that if you are going to kill him and his wife and blow up his car, you're going to do it very, very slowly, is my guess. So they'll have plenty of time to call the police on you. Yes, it can be extended, Christopher. Now, you don't sound like a kind of guy. You sound like a pretty friendly guy.
That's right.
Because you don't sound like a guy who said, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your wife. I'm going to kill your family. I'm going to blow up your car. You know, you just don't sound like that kind of a guy. So what kind of relationship did you guys have that caused you to say that?
Well, we had a rocky relationship.
Yeah, I described. Yeah, that's
it
fair.
It was rocky. I mean, he did things to me.
Okay.
As a child.
All right. That's fair. All right. Fair enough. I can't argue with that. Chuck. Hello, Chuck. Welcome.
Yeah. How you doing, Bill?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, I was wondering how can I go about verifying my inheritance?
Well, I don't know what that means. What do you mean, finding your inheritance? Is someone dead?
No, verifying how much I should have gotten. I've gotten $20,000. But my dad passed away 25 years ago. My mother was getting like, what, $30,000 a year?
Oh, hold on. All of this happened 25 years ago?
No. My dad's been gone for 25 years.
Okay. Oh, and wait a second.
Away.
Right. When was the will probated?
Just recently.
Okay, and you're a beneficiary under the will, correct?
Correct.
You should be able to see the will. It's that simple, a bunch of ways. Who was the executor of the will?
My older sister.
Your older sister has to show it to you. And if your older sister does not show it to you, you can go into the county records because a will is a public document and you can pull that out. And you can find out if your older sister is screwing you. Incidentally, if it turns out she won't show you the will, she's screwing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, no, there's no question about it, because there's no upside. If let's say I'm an executor and you're a beneficiary and I'm paying you what I should pay you, what's the downside of showing you the will?
Right.
Yeah, so...
I wouldn't be able to check on a settlement from 51 years ago, would I?
I'm sorry, settlement when?
Well, I got hit by a cement truck when I was like 11.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand. I'm not understanding a word you said, but that's all right. You know, we'll do this again at some point, as in probably never. Quick reminder that I am staying on the phone. We're going off the air in just a second. Leo Laporte's going to follow this show. And I will continue to take phone calls. First of all of you that are on hold, just hang loose. I'll answer your calls. And if you have a phone call for me and the line is busy, call again in 10 minutes, because I'm going to go through the calls pretty quickly. We don't have commercials. We don't have news or weather or any of that. I'm going to go straight through the phone calls. The number is 800-520-1534, 800-520-1534. Up next, Leo Laporte. I'm back Monday morning with the morning show starting at 6 a.m. This is Handle on the Law.